From the bayous in Louisiana to the timber country up north, you'll find them out on the trap line chasing furs to put up on the board. Mixing up another batch of that magical stuff, chilling around the fire after the show. Hey, it's Sarah and Jeff, and maybe a guest on the Trappin' Radio.
Welcome to Trapping Radio. Jeff and I are here at Minktoberfest with a really special guest. I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time. But we are here with Mr. Mitchell Simpson from Texas. So thanks for being on our podcast here.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
we've been talking about wanting to get Mitchell on it for quite a while.
Yeah. So you might hear some background noise. I'm sitting here looking at our three chefs, and I've never been here before, but from what I hear, Mitchell can correct me if I'm wrong, but we're having a steak dinner tonight.
That'd be correct.
Yep. So
Don Powell really does a nice job here.
This place is amazing.
Yeah.
I knew it would be nice just knowing Don, but it's even way nicer than what I imagined, especially like when we first walked into the top building up there and all the pictures from all the years and all the paraphernalia and seeing all the people we know. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
His trap shed is overwhelming. Yeah. You know how nice and neat and everything there is.
Yep, so they're working on the grill up there, and this is a pretty social event, so if somebody walks up, we tried to find a place in the corner here, but
anybody could be in this before it's done.
So, anyway, Mitchell, do you just introduce yourself? There's a lot of followers that may know about you but may not know your story and kind of, you know, how you got started a little bit and what you're doing now and, you know, just that kind of stuff.
Me and a friend of mine, we started, it would be probably in about 75. We were about 14, 15 years old, and the fur prices were high. And we started trapping together at that time and calling. And that kind of evolved. There were a lot of the cowboys and some of the farmers and all that didn't really want to skin coats and everything. But the coat market was so high, or fur in general, everything was so high that we got a loan from the bank. We were in high school, two high school boys. we got a loan from the bank and got checks printed up and everything, and we went to buying coyotes and stuff in high school, and we mainly bought carcass stuff, you know, that the cowboys and the farmers didn't want to skin, you know. And not that we made any big bucks, but we'd make a little buck, you know, a little bit on every one, nearly.
What did a coyote cost then?
Our coyotes at that time would range anywhere from $35 to $75.
Oh, wow.
And our cats, all of our cats were $200 to $350, and you could buy a brand spanking new four-wheel drive Silverado pickup for about $5,500.
Wow.
And you know, you got high school kids or something that might be making more money than their dad at the time, you know, that were out chasing coyotes and coons. You know, we have $45 coons, and just everything was worth a lot of money at the time. And so we did that for the rest of high school, and we went off to college, and we still did it in college. I mean, we were trapping, and then kind of when we got to college, we got to where we were really doing more calling than we were trapping. But we were still running a fur route, running on up in the panhandle, and we rented a little old place there to skin in and all. And I mean, there's times we'd have a few hundred coyotes around and it was pretty good money, and then all of a sudden the bottom fell out of that market, you know. And I contacted a guy in Colorado that had a fur farm, and he was kind of wanting some new breeding stock on bobcats, and so these cats had gone from $200 to $300 a piece to $50 a piece or something just nearly overnight. And so me and my best friend Wayne Reed, and we still trap and hunt together today, we went to buying live bobcats for him some new breeding stock, and we'd give about $100 for one, which is twice of what, you know, he's bringing fur market. And this guy in Colorado would pay all of our expenses to bring them to him, and we got $300 on the tomcats and $350 on the southcats. And he would, well, we'd go to the local vet and we'd get a feline distemper and rabies shot on them and health papers to haul them. It was before the Lacey Act or anything, you know. And to be legal and all, we would do all of that and haul a load of bobcats in the back of a pickup to Colorado for. And we sexed them, and at that time we didn't know anything about a catch pole or anything else.
What'd you use?
Well, you used a blanket.
Oh my God.
Sometimes it got a little western. But if you can get the blanket over them and get them pinned down under the blanket, they might hit it or once or twice, but then they'll quit. I mean, you can pick them up and carry them.
No
way. Put them
way.
In a cage. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's easier on the cat than the catch pole, really. But the catch pole's a whole lot easier on you. So, but we did that for, you know, in college and all. And really got to plumb away from the trapping for a number of years there, raising kids and family and everything. But we still run out and call. And then, you know, it all came back around and started going to West Texas, out in kind of some of that Big Bend country. And started out just running out there for 3 days of calling, and then we got to trapping again, and really, and we started trapping at home. I live right on the Paladura Canyon in Texas, and it's the second largest canyon in the United States, and nobody's ever heard of it really.
Mm-hmm.
So we trapped there and called, and just progressively got more involved in the trapping end of it. And, oh, 25 years ago, I didn't even know there was an association, really, and had some guys pull us into the association and become an officer, PR director, and later vice president, and later the president. And then I've kind of been in charge of all of the demo guys in our association for a number of years. But I retired 12 years ago. I was a firefighter for the city of Lubbock. And we have a really good pension fund. And I retired, and I started kind of working towards, anyway, doing more full-time trapping or going on bigger excursions. There, this cat market was good, and did a lot of trapping in New Mexico and Texas. And in those desert mountains of West Texas, they have some really nice cats, even though you're right on the border, you got some elevation. And we fur trapped, and then as the market's gone away the last, I don't know, 6-7 years, whatever it's been, I've switched over to predator control work, and I'm getting to where I'm getting real busy at it. I kind of do the western half of Texas and New Mexico, and I'm just on a place kind of from 10 to 14 days and try to kill as many coyotes as I can in 10 to 14 days. And I'm not there to kill that coyote. I'm there to kill numbers. And I don't know. It's evolved into that, and I really enjoy it. And I'm gone 4 or 5 months out of the year and have a very understanding wife.
So you primarily do your trapping in Texas then, on different
New Mexico and Texas.
Mexico
Western
stuff.
Half of, sure. of Texas and New Mexico.
Yeah.
Actually, that's the only states I've ever trapped in, but I've done quite a bit of trapping in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. There was a brief period, I guess, about 10, 11 years ago, I trapped lions where the state had reintroduced some desert bighorn sheep. fished that for about 10 months. Caught a handful of lines. I'm not a line trapper or don't profess to be, but I have caught a few lines. And those are always
exciting. How exciting is that?
Well, everybody says, oh, I bet that's exciting, trapping lines. Well, you know, if you like checking empty traps, it's a blast. And walking to them. If you want to walk to a bunch of empty traps...
Where do we go?
Sweat your rear off. And
I don't like checking traps anyway, so that probably...
I love checking traps.
I do too, but not empty ones. And that's line... You know, there's... You may go a month or two without catching one. When you do catch a line... It is very exciting.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot of wasted trips, I guess. Mm-hmm. And
so how do you set different? What are you looking for different for a lion versus, I don't know, a bobcat? What do you mean by walking? Are you making sets specifically for them?
Yes, making sets specifically for them. Set a lot of, like, saddles or around rim rocks, drainages. Those dry drainages, a lot of the same places you'd set for bobcats kind of. Just using a whole lot bigger trap. Mm-hmm. And I generally kind of like to fence it in because the reality is I used a lot of modified TS-85s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
That were heavily modified, four-coiled and really beefed up. Mm-hmm. And then LPC number 8s. And so basically I would make a corral out of brush with a maybe 10-12 foot in diameter. Like to use a squeaker and a couple of two or three different lures and have an opening that was maybe a foot to 18 inches wide and 2 foot tall to go in, just because you wanted to exclude. I never wanted to be more detrimental than the lion was.
Mm-hmm.
And to exclude, you know, the deer and definitely the bighorn sheep.
Right.
Yeah. And all dad that they have in that country. And so kind of fenced them off. And in some places where I didn't have the material, the brush and all to do that, I would actually take 4x4 welded wire panels and cut a foot wide by 2 foot tall opening in a welded wire panel and try to brush it in as much as I could and make my set in that. I prefer a walkthrough set on bobcats or anything, but with the nature of using line traps, I don't want to catch a Hereford cow, you know, and so, or the deer or anything else like that. So you kind of got to really block those in would be the biggest difference.
Do you remember your first one?
Oh, yeah.
What was it? Tell me the story. How did you get your first lion? I'm so interested.
Well,
did you set for it?
Don't get her too excited about it, and we'll be off.
Tell me everything.
Actually, it was just after I just set this ranch up, and I would stay anywhere from a week to 10 days out of the month, because it's 450 miles from my house. I would stay a week to 10 days out of the month there, and then the biologist and the ranch hands and all would check the traps through the month, you know, while I was gone. And I would come back and do remakes and re-lure.
I'm liking the sound of this a lot better.
Yeah. Remakes and re-lure and everything like that. And look, you know, for some new locations. And anyway, I had set it up, and it was the first deal. And I wasn't gone 10-12 days, and I come back because I want to get more traps in the ground instead of waiting for the next month. And I have one of my dear friends lives there in Marfa, Texas, and I generally would drive in and spend the night with him. We'd cook out and everything, maybe have an adult beverage or something, you know. And so we're sitting on his back patio, and all of a sudden I get a text. And it's the biologist that's just killed a lion in my trap.
Oh, he killed it.
And it's probably an hour and a half from town to the headquarters of this ranch. It's a lot of 20-something miles of dirt road. Mm-hmm. And I was just sick thinking, if I'd went on to the ranch, you know, or whatever.
Right.
But he doesn't realize I'm even going to be back that soon. And so my first one was, you know, a little disappointing. It was exciting because it was 12 days, you know, into it, which is some of the times you go months without catching one. And not I haven't ever caught a big number of them or anything. One of the funniest ones that I caught was actually, it was in New Mexico. And I had a guy hire me to Trapper Ranch there because he said, I'm losing calves like I have never lost calves before. And he knew of me from out in West Texas. He had a ranch there. So he contacted me and asked me if I would, what I'd charge him to go over there and try to catch these cows or whatever for him. When I got there that first night, and he had a Mexican man that stayed there at that ranch, him and his brother, but they lived in Mexico, and they would spend 40 days there. They had their green card and all work visas, but he'd stay 40 days, and then he would go back home, and the other brother would come. Anyway, he was really super, super nice guy. And he cooked for us, and so jovial and happy all the time. And when I got there, he asked me, Mitchell, he said, something's getting my chickens. He said, would you set a trap for me? I said, yeah, I'll set a trap down there for you and all. And so I set a couple of traps down at the chicken house here at the headquarters of the ranch. And the next morning he come rushing in there and he said, Mitchell, he said, you caught a coyote. And I said, well, okay, G, I'll take care of it here in a minute, you know. And so I went out and killed the coyote and everything. And anyway, I went and gone all day setting traps, come in just about dark, and I got in dark. And he said, Mitchell, he said, you caught my rooster.
Went from hero to zero.
Yeah. Pretty quick. So after that, in the morning, I'd walk down and cover those two traps with a hard plastic deal. Just those chickens was dusting in loose dirt. And, I mean, the chicken ended up being fine. He was a little gimpy for a while, but he was fine. And anyhow.
Then what?
Well, every day I would walk down there just about daylight or right before and cover those two traps up. And I didn't catch any more coyotes or anything. Probably 5, 6, 7 days. I don't remember exactly. I go walking down there, going to cover my traps and open the gate and step through. And I got a line laying here at the chicken house.
Oh, my God.
And I don't know. She's a... all between 80 and 90 pound female, old female. Mm. And she's sitting there, she's trying to be, there's not a shred of cover anywhere, you know, for her to hide behind. And I saw no sign of a lion anywhere when I was sitting. It was a total surprise.
Wow.
But it was in a period there where it was actually legal to kill them. There's a 4-year period there in New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
That it was legal to kill them. And
wow.
Anyway,
what'd he say?
The landowner was there, and this old lion, all of her canines were smooth and rounded off. I mean, they had polished back even. And so he was pretty excited, and he didn't have any more calf killing going on. And I feel sure, because this old lion, you know, and those canines all being rounded off, and she's up in little dwarf mesquite country. I mean, they're not 2-3 foot tall. Mm-hmm. I mean, just in sand duney kind of stuff. There's not a whole lot of cover. So I feel like she was probably hunting calves, you know, and evidently maybe chickens too.
Yeah.
But that would be kind of the most unusual of those.
When you were setting up for like the lions, like I had caught two out in Arizona. One was just a luck catch. The other one was wounded, you know. So I basically, but I don't have a bunch of experience on that. But like down to Texas, when we go there trapping cats and coyotes, generally what we would, you know, because like you say, you're there about, you know, 2 weeks, you know, 30 days at the most on a ranch. But what I'd see was, is you'd see a track, and then we're never going to be there by the time it ever comes back. So basically, if you weren't set up for it, you would have never, there's no chance. But were you looking for the sign, like, you know, see a track or a scat, and then setting that up, or were you just what you thought
location,
would be a good location?
Location, because there's, you know, in that country out there, there's just very few places that leave a track.
Yeah.
And so you really, those travel ways that they could go off of a rim, because there was some of this country that was just a sheer rock face, and there were just limited places that they could go off of that. Or dry drainages are always outstanding places for bobcats or lions or whatever. And I'm no lion expert at all. I don't want to claim to be. I just been fortunate and got to catch a few of them. My buddy Wayne Reed caught a couple back-to-back days one time.
Yes.
First one he caught, I was really proud for him, you know, because he hadn't caught one at that point. And the next day when he has one, I'm not quite as proud for him, you know. I'm like, you need to be sharing a little bit of this. But.
Was Wayne, he was at the Fur Takers?
Yes.
Yeah, I met him down there. He's a really nice guy.
Wayne Reed, like I said, we've hunted and trapped together since we was about 14.
He's pretty tall and, you know.
Big hands.
He sat at the Texas booth for quite a while.
I sat over there talking to him a lot.
He's actually the treasurer of our association and a farmer, a really good farmer, really good hunter.
Yeah. Well,
we've had a lot of fun together over the years. Last year didn't get to go with me. He's trying to work into retirement, and so he doesn't have a hired hand anymore. And with cattle and everything, he wasn't able to go. But his son's moved back home, and he's actually going to go with me here in a couple of weeks on this next job.
You two out there, them coyotes definitely don't stand a chance.
Well, I don't know about that, but hopefully I hope that's the case, but who knows. Man, you don't always catch them.
Mm-hmm. So when you go into a new ranch or a farm, and you're there for a short period of time, and you're trying to catch numbers, what's your approach on? I mean, how do you set it up? Is it fence? Is it footholds? Is it a mixture? How do you tackle a large number and a large piece of ground quickly?
First off, I'm going to study it on Onyx. Mm-hmm. And if it's a property that I haven't been on, the nice thing, and I've been using a Garmin, Montana series mapping GPS over the years with Onyx cards in them, but I've just, in the last couple of years, trying to switch totally just to Onyx. And
mm-hmm. So what are you looking for on Onyx?
Well, first off, I look for a route, that we can make to where you're not backtracking a lot. And I try to study those ranch roads and make a route. And then, it's just like trapping
features?
Anything. Yeah. You're looking for intersections and edges. They may be different intersections and edges. If you're cat trapping, that may be saddles in a long running ridge. That may be the intersection. But if you're cow trapping, it may be the intersection of two roads, or a cow trail in a road, or a dry wash, two dry washes, a dry wash in a road, or edges and intersections for whatever. But you don't get to scout as much when you're trying to get something of size set up and catch numbers and be gone in 10 to 14 days. So the more work you can do ahead of time, or when you get to go back to those places, a lot of times the first time on the place, maybe day 6, 7, or 8, your big catch day. But after you've been on those places, and I always save those waypoints that produce.
Okay.
A lot of those waypoints that don't produce, I trash them. That might have been my best place next year. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I come back in, and the first thing that I do is I set those waypoints that produced in the past. Mm-hmm. And I'm hanging snares in. If it's net wire, I'm hanging snares under the crawls, provided they're a safe hole to hang. I don't want anything that I'd stand the chance of catching a deer or anything like
Absolutely.
That. but a combination of snares and traps. I don't trail snare any. It's just going to be under the fence. I'd rather use a trap inside the fence. But study that Onyx. I take Rick Miller with me for 5 or 6 weeks out of the year, and Rick is really, really good on Onyx.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick's a beast on the trap line. You may beat him one day, but you're not going to beat him overall. I'll tell you, he's a really outstanding trapper.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever met Rick before, but I've heard good things about him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's from Iowa, right?
Right. Yep. He has a home in Texas, just about 50 miles from me.
Mm-hmm.
And that Tommy came out, and mm-hmm. Bryant came and trapped with him when we got back.
And I think Rick caught one more coyote than Tommy.
At least, and it was a lot bigger than any of the Tommy
caught. I knew it was bigger for sure.
Uh-huh. You know, that's what happened when you use those little baby traps.
Yeah.
You can't catch the big ones.
Yeah.
So I have very little experience trapping in Texas. I've only been there once. Me and Jeff went, last winter. But what's your Texas setup? I mean, because the ground is so different, and the heat and the humidity and all of that. What's your foothold, or what trap do you use, and what's your set? And
I use KB 5.5s, and they hadn't been around. Hadn't been sold, I don't know, 17, 18 years or so. But they're a really quality trap. If I had to start over today, I'd probably be running a KO Junior 2 coil, maybe. I use a lot of super stakes, chain super stakes, and then some drags, but I'm on a pre-hooker drag. I don't want to have to.
Right.
With the way that my program kind of works, I don't want to have to look for something. I need to get on down the road, and it's pretty high energy those first few days anyway.
Mm-hmm.
To try to get as much in the ground.
Like using them super stakes, you're not cutting them off. So how are you pulling them in that ground?
I've got a puller that will pull them. Pull them by hand. Mm-hmm. It's it's got a radius on it.
Is that what you got Rick for?
Yeah, he's a beast. He can do it. We actually carry two pullers, and so we're pulling. We can pull. We can pull a lot of traps in a day. Whoa.
That ground is hard down there.
Oh yeah, but the pullers that we have, Rick uses one of Kendall's, but mine has a bigger radius on it than that, and a little longer panel, and mine is heavy, mm-hmm. but. You're pulling or you're breaking chain one.
Well, you got the Can-Am to carry it, though.
Well, and yeah. But I try not to take my rig.
Mm-hmm.
I usually make them furnish me rigs, kind mm-hmm. of the way. Because, man, that's a huge cost, the wear and tear on, like I said, what those side-by-sides cost nowadays and the whole works, and they don't last that long. In comparison,
well, the tires certainly don't last that long. We picked ours up from the dealer, went right to Texas, and flat tire right away. But everybody's using slime, but they had this other stuff we put in. I don't remember what it was called, but it was way better than slime.
Yeah.
And tires go flat. We put that in there and never had a problem again. Our tires look like porcupines sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of a white. Color grayish white colored stuff, and I can't think of the name of it, but
I was gonna
it
buy,
is better than slime.
I was gonna buy some and bring it back, and I was like, I never need this in Michigan.
Right.
So we're
you have a rock cut yours or something, and there's no fixing it.
No, but we're looking at Kevlar tires this year.
I run an 8-ply.
Do you?
Yeah, and just with the sealing in them, and then I run Milwaukee equipment. The M18 stuff, and I've got one of the little M18 compressors,
mm-hmm.
and so you can yank the battery out of your drill if you need to and slap it in there, and it'll really air up a tire. It's got a good brass fitting on the end instead of plastic.
We'll have to look at that.
The thing about those little cheap air compressors, which you don't need a lot of pressure to air up one of those tires, but they have a little old plastic screw-on deal, and they get cross-fitted. This has a nice brass one, and it'll air up a pickup tire really pretty quick. But
yeah, cause when you're down way back in there somewhere, you definitely want to have something.
You got to have a plug kit, and you got to have an air compressor, because when you may be in parts of the ranch that somebody never gets to for, you know, once a month or every 2 months, and
there's no reception.
Absolutely,
and there's no reception,
no phone service, and a lot further than old fat guy wants to walk. So
yeah, we were down there. I was looking at my phone, and I got no service. I'm looking over at the guy, the ranch hand, or the manager, driving us around. He's looking. He's got, you know, full service, but he had AT&T.
I have one of each. I got an AT&T and a Verizon phone, both that I carry for that reason right there. But some of the times you don't have service on either. But the size of some of those properties, this property that I'm headed to in a couple of weeks, I went down and looked at it last month, and I met the guy at the front gate, and he said, well, I'm gonna just follow me into the lodge. He said it'll be about 40 minutes. And I'm thinking, yeah, right.
Yeah,
it was every bit of 40 minutes from the front gate to the lodge, and you're not on the back of the place yet. So I meant, you don't want to get broke down somewhere.
That's like a 2 or 3 day walk.
Yeah, I mean, and we have a lot of days that we may run, 80 to 120 mile trap line. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's not counting driving to a trap line. When you pull out of the lodge or wherever you're staying there, you're on the trap line. Yeah. So it's all trap line.
That's what I like, that's how it was with us. We pull out and we go to the right, and what was it, eighth of a mile? You know, there's a bobcat. We got our first bobcat sets right there. You know,
which
walked right by, and we never did catch.
Yeah, so. I mean, we did put 1,100 miles on the side by side in a month.
But we didn't do what Mitchell said about the not backtracking. It was all backtracking on.
Well,
this thing.
You get in the South Texas. In the South Texas, there's such a grid of roads that you really probably have to do a little bit, but we still try to lay it off in loops as much as we can, figure eights or loops, and we occasionally have to backtrack a little bit, but we try not too much.
Yeah, I mean, in the place we were on, you mentioned intersections. I mean, literally, there's an intersection every time you open your eyes for the fifth time, there's another intersection. I mean, it was just crazy to me. It's like,
I had trouble the first time down there with Norm, is on that 5,000 acres, there was 41 miles of roads. And it's like, there's an intersection, and I see the next intersection, and there's coyote shit here. And in the next intersection, there's coyote shit. And I told Norm, I says,
how do you know?
How do you know which one to set? I said, it doesn't, everything looks the same to me. And he just start setting them all, you'll sort it out. So that's what I did. And it got better, you know, as it went. But
man, that first time in South Texas, looking at, you know, deer stands. You got deer stands, and they got shooting lanes and senderos. And it's like a wagon wheel nearly, that blinds right there. And you got maybe six different roads coming into one spot like a wagon wheel or something. And boy, I was excited about that many intersections coming together at a deer blind. And boy, set every one of those suckers up and didn't hardly catch anything at a deer blind, you know, or right there at that intersection where the deer blind was. I caught some, but it was one of the least productive places that we set.
You're thinking the same thing.
That's what happened to us, Mitchell.
What did we call that place? We had a special name. It had six roads coming in. I mean,
in a deer blind.
Yeah.
And we didn't catch anything.
Not one thing. We got dug out by one coyote, and that was it.
Well, I don't set any deer blinds anymore, and I don't care how many roads. I don't, you know, I'm sure, you know, cats are, but there's usually a deer blind wherever there's a feeder, you know.
Yeah.
And so, no, that first time in South Texas, I thought, oh my gosh, look at all the roads coming together in this one spot. This is the Holy Grail.
That's it. But, that sounds exactly what we said.
But it's not.
No.
A word of advice. Anybody going to South Texas, that's not the spot.
I wish we would have known that before we set 12 traps there.
We should have talked to you last year.
12 traps.
We did the same thing. It's a it humbles you some of the times.
Yep, that's for sure.
I don't think anything of it's too complicated. I think the guy that's got the most coyotes and the most country and works the hardest is the one that catches lots of coyotes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What type of sets do you primarily?
If I'm just trapping for numbers, I'm using a step down dirt hole. Mm-hmm. I'm in nearly exclusively. Mm-hmm. A little bit, maybe. And now cat sets, no, I'm going to put in. I prefer walkthroughs on cat sets, but mm-hmm. and I will put in a few rub sets. But for coyotes, for numbers, especially being there a short period of time, like I am, a step down dirt hole. And I mean, I got educated on that. My good friend Mark Weiss from PA came down and trapped with me, and I used to run a lot more flat sets than I do now. And he kind of spanked on me pretty good with a step down dirt hole. He had taken instruction with Leggetts and his friends with him. And then Rick Miller I got to where I was using some step down dirt holes and still other stuff. And then I went to trapping with Rick Miller, and Rick had trapped with the Leggetts and all in a number of two or three different places he had. And he spanked on me for about 2 days, and I figured out real, and that's all he did. It was kind of funny. I used to keep a spreadsheet that my wife had made on Excel, and you had a column for the date and then the location. I put my waypoint number and then the type of set. You put DH for dirt hole or F for flat set or whatever, abbreviated everything, and lure and the bait and urine and then the catches over there. And you could record everything about a set in a matter of 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I went down there with Rick, and I said, well, what kind of set did you put in? Dirt hole. Well, what lure? Same as last time. What bait? Same as last time. And about the third or fourth set down the road, I asked him these questions, and it's the same. And he said, I'll tell you what, it'd just be easier. If I change something, I'll
let you know.
Yeah, I'll let you know. And so... it was, anyway, Rick's a really outstanding trapper. I can't say enough good about him, and I've learned an awful lot from him, and I've learned from my buddy Mark Weiss up here, that's a really outstanding fox trapper. And like I said, that's, I guess a lot of it goes back to Leggetts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they took instruction or trapped with, both of them did, and so they're using a set similar to what they use, not exactly the same thing, but mm-hmm. You know, we all modify stuff a little bit.
Yep, that's you know how we all have learned to do what we do is monkey see, monkey do. You have a little bit of success with it, and you know,
change then you it get your confidence.
Yep, that's I think like you said, the hard work is the main thing. You know, whoever is out there working the hardest and has the most coyotes or coon or whatever.
Exactly,
but. You know, I mean, the other thing is the confidence is a big thing, because, you know, I mean, I just know that, you know, let's say you have a bad day on the line on them jobs, on the end of it, you're putting traps in the ground. It doesn't matter what happens during that day, you know, you're still going to be setting traps, and, you know, I mean, you're not quitting. And I think a lot of guys get discouraged, you know, because they're out there with their six traps, they didn't catch a coyote the first night. You know, I mean, so I think it just takes that confidence. Sometimes people get too much confidence, but.
Yeah. And some of the times, you know, I don't set as many traps as a lot of people would think that you set in you know, really big acreage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking, you know, 50,000 acres, 80,000 acres. And just a lot of times there's not as many traps there as what you'd think there would be. You know, guys that are used to trapping smaller acreage up here in the Northeast thinking, oh my gosh, it'll take 2,000 traps to set 80,000 mm-hmm. acres. Well, 200 maybe, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
to do 80,000 acres. And I think in our part of the world anyway, I think a guy can overset.
Mm-hmm.
I think if every corner they come around, you know, and they're smelling new smells every corner, or the same smell that hadn't been there, I think if you hadn't caught them on that first set or two, they're going to get tough.
What happened, and I think you're 100% right, because what happened is exactly what you just said. When Norm told me to, you know, go ahead and just, you know, set them, everyone, and that's exactly, them coyotes quit using them crossings, and they cross in the middle. You know, they tightened it right up. So exactly what you just said is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
The cats, it didn't seem to matter.
No, I don't. Nothing matters to a cat.
but them coyotes definitely changed what they were doing.
Oh, yeah. They'll go off-road on you. They can come up where, you know, where your set is and peel off the road and go around it and then come back in the road down there somewhere. Yeah.
And when we got to the ranch last year, Albert was there 10 days or 2 weeks before us, and he had already snared 50 or 55 coyotes in the fence, and they had even quit. You know, you weren't catching any more on the fence. You catch, yeah, like one every 3 days or something.
Sure, that's quite a few to, you know, snare.
And them coyotes on the inside of there were spooked. I mean, they were spooked inside that fence.
Well,
so it's weird how that them animals can sense that there's something going on.
I don't think that they're smart. No. I don't think they're reasoning or have logic. Baby can do that, but it's just like that big buck. You know, that activity increases when deer season ends. There's so much more activity in the field, and that puts them on alert, I think. Just the increase in activity, and the same when you come in there and start trapping, you know, on a lot of these ranches, this road, somebody might not go down it, but once a month or once a week or something like that. And you're running that road every 24 hours, you know, by basically in Texas, if you're trapping fur bears, you got a 36-hour check's what you have. Mm-hmm. That's every day, because nobody's doing it at 1 at night or in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so you increase that activity a lot, and I think that, you know, puts some stuff on alert. And then they got a new smell around every corner. And I think they'll get, you know, tough after, if you hadn't caught them pretty quick. Those ranches, though, that we've trapped year in, year out, I started to talk about that earlier. You know, the first year on them, it's out there day 6, 7, or 8, you know, your big day. And when you come back in and go to setting those waypoints that's produced in the past, this last year on one of them, I know day 2 was our big day. 48 hours in was our big day. We 24 hours in, we had 15 coyotes in the first 24 hours. And then 48 hours, we had 20. And in the first 4 days, we ended up at 63 caught.
Wow.
And then it was, you know, each day it went to tapering off.
That's really what you wanted to do.
Well, with the way I do it, since I'm only going to be there 10 to 14 days, and I think that makes it a little appealing to the landowner because I charge a daily rate, and they know I'm not going to be there a month. And if it drops off, I don't want to be milking them for money. I want to go down to road to another place,
stay catching.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to overwear my welcome, I guess.
Do you do any coon work down there or anything like that?
No. If I'm on a place that's a small place, which I don't do very many that are small, but if I'm on a place that's not very big, and it's not going to take up my day, I feel kind of obligated to set a few dog proofs.
That's what we had a lot of fun down there, you know, trapping them coon. And I'm always surprised when I catch one of them, like a big boar, how nice they actually are, because I know it's because of the protein feed and all that, but they look like, some of them look like an Iowa coon without the under fur on them.
You got to come up into the panhandle.
No, I know. Them ones probably
aren't. They are beautiful.
Are they beautiful?
They're beautiful.
Really?
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, 25-pound coons are not uncommon at all.
Huh.
I mean, you may catch, you don't catch a lot of coons there, but you might have a day where you catch a handful of them, and all of them are over 20 pounds, you know, and they're, a lot of them are really good silver-colored or really black, and they got long fur, and like I said, I've had my buddy from Pennsylvania down trapped with me, it just blows his mind. I've got top lot coons. I've had, you know, they come from the Texas Panhandle where I live.
My buddy was in, I think it was Longview,
And, those are smaller coons.
But he would still get some that would go in and set by heavy. That's when I started realizing that all them coon down there aren't like a Louisiana, they're not like a Mississippi coon. You know,
we have a really big, pretty coon up in the Panhandle.
Yeah.
Really, really nice coon. We don't have big numbers of them, but the ones we have are.
You would think those really would be nice. Really good for like hat makers and stuff. Because, I mean, generally, if you get like a fur hat, it's, you know, heavy and super warm where they don't have that under fur on, you'd think that that would be like a big marketing thing for raccoons.
But we get pretty cold in the Panhandle.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Our temperatures are really similar to right here.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I've got a buddy up here, and he saves our weather, and I save his weather on our weather bug. And most days, we're pretty close to the same. And I know winter before last, I had more snow than he did in the Panhandle.
Again. Yeah.
And that's where I live. And I actually did a school there with Wayne Derrick and Yuri Gibson and Andy Weiser for a couple of years. We did a school there. And
You don't do a school anymore?
No. There's just a lot of logistics in it and a lot of headaches.
Yeah.
And I can go and trap on a paid job somewhere, and I don't have near the logistics or near the headaches. And the nice thing about it is I actually met Don Powell at one of those. I met Jeff Haggerty at a school that I was, involved with. There's a number of other guys here at this deal that I actually met. I think all total about 100 and something students have been through. You got to meet a lot of nice people and a lot of connections. I probably wouldn't be sitting here today at Minktoberfest if it hadn't been for those schools. And a lot of Zagger. I met Zagger at a school, that we had down there. And Mike Murray. And, not to mention a lot of other people, but just trying to think of some of the people that I've met at those deals that people would know.
No, you're right on them schools. I mean, they're definitely a lot of logistics and hard. And my thing is a lot of them people, I end up becoming friends with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to charge people $1,400 to ask for my help. You're not getting all that. I mean, you're getting a nice place to stay and food.
Right.
But my thing is I have a hard time charging a trapper a bunch of money just to help them. And I always struggle with that. That's why we ain't done the school. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, like you said, we have met some of our best friends.
Yeah, we have.
That have taken that school, and they'd be there in a heartbeat for us, and we'd be there for them.
Oh, it's the contacts. It's probably more important than what you learned at the school. Nearly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, you learn a lot from the students too. Mm-hmm. They got lots of good ideas, and a lot of them are accomplished trappers, and even somebody that's not an accomplished trapper may have a really good ideal or tip or trick or something that they do. We can all, if you quit learning, you're not ever going to get any better. If you don't continue to learn and improve, you never get better. You're just going to stay the same.
As I get older, I think I am getting worse as a trapper because I start thinking I really know less and less and less and less. I don't really think I know hardly anything anymore.
I don't either.
I think I know some, and I watch them game cameras, and I'm like, I am really shitty that I had three otters go around my, but I learn a lot, and that's why and I'm sure it's the same with you. I mean, it's just, the learning is the fun when you learn something new.
And trapping with somebody, y'all trap together all the time, but I mean, I love trapping by myself, and it's a lot of fun, but it's three or four times as much fun trapping with somebody. You get to share those experiences and the unusual things that happen on the trap line and the exciting things and some of the stupid things that you don't really want anybody else seeing.
But it
all makes for a good time.
Oh, don't worry, Sarah will tell everybody.
Only if it's about Jeff. Yeah, I wouldn't.
No, not
tell
about you. She wouldn't. She would go to the grave with that, but with me, she'll tell every damn thing. But no, you're right. It's like when we go with Haggerty and Nick Ernie and you know, different friends we have. I mean, it's always a lot of fun to go.
We're fixing to go to New York Fisher trapping with Chappie and his wife Wendy and Donald, and I've never caught a Fisher before, so I'm super excited. And Chappie's done so much prep work. He's already got, like, I don't know how many boxes ready to go, and traps are dyed and waxed, and he's all getting prepared.
I made Zyger bring me a couple of boxes, and
I saw that.
I had two boxes.
Yeah, I saw you sneaking around those boxes.
Well, I'm gonna try them and see if I can catch a ringtail cat.
Oh, that's exciting.
What I'm thinking about. I'm not, you know, I don't have much chance of a Fisher. But
what part of Texas are them ringtail cats?
Man, there used to be quite a few in a lot of places, the central Texas and even some of South Texas, and then out in West Texas, you know, like rough country. But I think distemper, I don't know. I've heard feline distemper just really about wiped them out. And so they're in really small pockets now. And I was at a place that had some, but I went to town and bought a couple of little live traps, but I didn't ever catch anything. But
I was gonna say,
I never caught one of those. My dad caught one in Arizona, and he brought it back to camp, and I'm like, what the heck is that? You know, they're so weird looking. Look like almost like a monkey with a raccoon tail.
They're neat little animals. They really are.
I would love to catch one of them.
Well, I would like to. I'm not gonna. There's a gentleman here that's caught everything except one species in North America.
Really?
Uh-huh. He likes a Cotamundi. That's what he likes. And Arizona's the only place you can catch them and keep them. And you can kill one a year.
What are them one cats? They have them in Texas. But I think you can't. I know you can't track.
Jaguarundi or ocelot.
Ocelot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seen one of them in Louisiana one time. Long time ago.
No. I've been talking to a dead phone call.
Wouldn't that be something?
I still enjoyed it.
Yeah. I did too. I don't know. This is a cool experience here, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to sit down and visit with people just like we are right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's really enjoyable, because a lot of these people we see at conventions, but we're at the booth all the time, and they go by just like when I met you. You know,
exactly.
I mean,
you're busy. Yeah, I don't want to take away from your business. You know, I'd like to visit.
And my thing is, I would stand there all day to talk to you. You know, because you had so many cool experiences. So I'd stand there all day. Mm-hmm. You know, but then you got somebody waiting there, and it's like
wants
to give you money.
Well, that's what you're there for. You know, is to sell your product and all, and so.
But it's nice to come here where, you know, everybody that we've seen, we can sit down and visit with them. And
I mean, and you can just look up the driveway here, and there's, you know, a dozen guys standing around talking. I'm sure they're talking about mink trapping up there at the little ditch. And, I mean, that's just so cool to me that everybody here is just willing to help each other learn and share stories. And
Zagger, I mean, if you want to see the star of the show, you come, and Zagger is the star of the show.
Mm-hmm. And Neil and Zagger they compete for the star of the show.
Zagger's got a pretty good grip to hang onto that microphone.
He does. He can outgrip the old guy. But no, you learn so much here just sitting around visiting with people. Yeah. I mean, you learn at the demos or whatever, but just sitting around talking.
Yeah.
You know, you can learn a lot of stuff.
And, you know, if somebody wanted to go on out-of-state trips and stuff like that, you know, this would be, like, the perfect place, because there's people from all over the United States, you know, coming here, you know. So, I mean, you know, you can make a friend, and you don't know, you know, who you're going to meet. But, you know, and this is really the place to do it. Next year could be the last time. You know, Don's a heck of a salesman, so every year is the last year. But
exactly.
At some point, it will be the last year.
Absolutely. He stresses so over it, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's I have a really good friend here, Mark Weiss from PA.
You have to introduce us. I don't know him.
He has a real bullfroggy voice. A really good fox trapper. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we met here at the first time I came.
Mm-hmm.
We met here and we really hit it off and became really close friends. And anyway, later on, it may have been the next year or something, but I was talking to him on the phone, and it was in December. And I said, well, you know, what are you going to do after Christmas? And he said, oh, he takes off a couple of weeks and traps fox, you know, takes vacation for 2 weeks. And, you know, he may bust a 200 fox in 2 weeks. He said, and anyway, he said, oh, I might put a couple of traps in the ground or something. I said, well, what do you think about putting them in New Mexico? And he's like, you serious? And I said, yeah.
I'm on my way.
So he got him a reservations and flew, and we went cat trapping in New Mexico. Aww. And it was kind of a cool story. He rented a car in Amarillo, and I was already at the ranch, and I told him, I said, you know, when you get to Fort Sumner, New Mexico, I said, right before you get into town, there's going to be a sign, and it's going to say Billy the Kid's grave and an arrow pointing. I said, you turn and you go to Billy the Kid's grave, and I will meet you there and lead you back into this ranch. And so we met at Billy the Kid's grave and went back into that ranch. And then he's been, four or five times he's came and trapped with me now.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't had the school.
Of it's connected.
Yeah.
It's all connected because I met Don through one of the schools, and then I met Mark here, and mm-hmm. I've met so many good friends here, and the more I come up here, it's like seeing old friends, you know, and you learn a whole lot more about them every time, and and then I don't go to a lot of conventions. I go to a handful, but you see those guys again. It's a totally unique experience here. There's nothing else like it.
No, I would say that's 100% accurate.
You just get to know the people here. You spend 3 days with them, and you get to know people.
Yeah, there's a guy from Michigan that's here, his first time here, and he says, I'm just really not a social person, but he had signed up to come here, and he says, I almost didn't come because I didn't think I'm going to know. I won't know anybody from here. And so he is Butch, and he is here, and he's having a great time, and he's met a ton of people. And
he said, now he's talking about going to all kinds of conventions.
Yeah, he wants to go to conventions to see, see different people. And
it kind of opened his world.
But everybody's just your friend here. I mean, we're all like-minded people.
And I don't have any secrets, man. I'll share anything with anybody. Mm-hmm. Set-wise, bait-wise, lure-wise, I don't care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell them where I trap. I'm not worried about losing the places, you know. Some people are really secretive. And when I was a kid, man, absolutely nobody would tell you anything. No. And if they did tell you something, it was misinformation usually.
Yeah,
but those prices were so high at the time.
And a lot of the people were making their living doing that.
Yeah, I guess so. But they wouldn't share anything. And,
no.
And you can learn so much. You can be so far ahead of the curve. Somebody, not even just a novice, but, you know, a seasoned guy can learn something here too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I learned quite a bit of stuff here.
Yeah, those speed demos, those are something up there. 5 minutes, you get 5 minutes to talk about a tip or a trick or something that you're doing. I learned quite a bit.
Unless Zagger has the microphone.
Yeah. That's right.
And Zagger's 5 minutes is like 45 minutes.
Yep. Mitchell, thank you so much for sitting down with us.
We appreciate it more than we can say.
Yep.
Well, thanks for asking me.
Yeah.
All right. Enjoyed it.
All right. Well, I hope you have a good season.
Do you have anything you want to promote? Or?
We've got Texas's rendezvous coming up here in a couple of weeks. Like I said, it'll be about the 18th and 19th in Gatesville, Texas. We'd love to have anybody that'd like to come.
And join the Texas Trappers Association.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
By all means. Join your state association.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
First, but I mean, we'd love to have you in Texas's association too. We do have
I'm
a magazine.
I'm a member, Sarah's not.
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are?
I am.
I told you if I do something wrong, she'll tell you.
And I got the shirt and everything.
All right.
Yep.
Oh, fine. Right. Copycat.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mitchell. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.